All right, Masechet Moed Katan. We did the first three Mishnayot yesterday. We're on Mishnah Dalid. More actions connected a little bit to the field, but more, a little bit removed from that, that you're allowed or not allowed to do on Chola Moed. Mishnah Dalid. Sadin et ha'ishut ve'et ha'achbarim misedeh ha'ilan u'misedeh ha'lavan shelo kedarko ba'moed u'bashivirit. The word sad means to trap. Okay, so a person who owns a field sometimes has little critters that run around the field and hurt his crops and hurt his produce. So he puts out traps, tries to catch them. So the Mishnah tells us it's permissible for a person to catch on Chol HaMoed, ishut and achbarim. Achbarim are mice or rodents. Ishut they usually translate as a possum, or what do they put it there as in the English translation? A ferret maybe?
Moles.
That's a better translation, right? Ishut is a mole. Achbarim are mice or rodents. A person is allowed to trap them on Chol HaMoed to protect his crops. Not only on Chol HaMoed, but also on Shemitah. Right? Even though Shemitah is asur in labor, that's not considered a labor that's connected to the field. He's allowed to do this for Sedeh HaIlan, for an orchard. Umis Sedeh HaLavan. He's also allowed to do it for a white field. A white field always references grain that he's growing in his field because it has a white color. Shelo kedarko. So he's allowed to do all of these, but not in the normal fashion. He has to do it with a shinui. He has to do it a little differently. So he could put out a trap and do it on its own, but if he's actually, chasing after them or trying to whatever, he has to do it in a way which is a little bit different than normal fashion in which he does it. Okay, so that's shelo kedarko. Other people have the language of kedarko in here, and as we're going to see, the hachamim are going to argue, but even in Tanakama, they say that you could do it kedarko ba-moed and shelo kedarko ba-shivi'ayit. So there's a bit of a discrepancy over here. We'll just go with the text that's in front of us, that a person has to do it shelo kedarko, in a different way. V'hachamim omrim, the rabbis disagreed, they said, misedeh ha'ilan kedarko. If you're trying to catch them in an orchard, you could do it kedarko. You could do it the regular way. Why? Because moles and rodents cause extra damage to orchards. Don't ask me, I'm just going to take their word for it. I never had an orchard before, but apparently these kinds of critters around an orchard can do severe damage, much more than on a grain field. So when it came to the orchard, they let them do it any way that they wanted, even the regular way. But when it came to the grain field, they said, shelo kederko, you should do it not in the normal fashion. So again, this connects to our main idea that we've been saying since yesterday. I'm going to say all along, but since yesterday, right? Which is that when something is a dire situation, when something is going to be what we call a hefsed gadol, a big loss, a significant loss for a person, the rabbis, because they're the ones who are defining everything here, tend to be a lot more lenient. They tend to allow a person to do more because they understand human nature is the person needs to avoid those kinds of significant losses. And so since everything here is derabanan anyway, and the rabbis are defining the parameters, they were a little more on the lenient side when it came to things that caused significant damage and loss. Things that were not as dire or significant, the rabbi said, try to avoid them or to do them only in a shinui, only in an out in a different way, so that a person keeps the holiday on his mind, he doesn't become distracted from that.
He's saying a wheat field is just unusual as opposed to flat out because they're probably not going to eat wheat as much as they would.
Correct. Apparently they don't. Apparently these animals do not cause as significant a loss in a wheat field as they do in an orchard. And so that's the difference of why the rabbis were more lenient in the orchard, more strict on the wheat field. Umekarim et ha'pirtza b'moed u'bashivirit bone kedarko. If a person has a fence or a wall around his garden, and let's say a part of the wall collapses, right, or breaks, and he wants to fix it. So says the Mishnah, Mekarin et ha'pirtza b'moed. He's allowed to reset the stones or bricks of the wall to close it up, but he's not allowed to use cement. He could put them back up so that it makes the appearance that it's guarded, but he's not allowed to build them the regular way by putting cement in them. So it's a sort of a temporary fix to avoid certain things, but it's not a permanent fix that he's doing over there. That's what's permissible on Chol HaMoed, because since we're talking about over here, we're talking about like a garden or something, the commentaries say over here, not like the wall to get into his house. If it's something that's more about security or danger, so then the rabbis for sure would allow a person to be able to build it, or if it's something that that can cause him, again, significant loss, he's definitely allowed to do it. But over here, they're talking about a situation where he has like a little garden in front of his house or something like that, and he just wants to keep animals and stuff like that out. It's not the most crazy situation for him. So on that, they say you're allowed to reorganize them, but don't cement them because that's more permanent structure. Ubashivi'it, but on Shemitah, boneh kederko. A person is allowed to build it as regularly, because they're a little bit more lenient on the Shemitah year, because you're not going to leave it that way for the whole year, right? Chol HaMoed is just a few days, right? So you can get past a few days without having to do it. But to go through the whole year right. It that way is a little bit too much to ask. And so there on Shavuot, the person can rebuild it. He could put back up his thing as need be. Again, the Ben Ovadiah over here says, Aval kotel hatzer shenafal, if an entire wall of a courtyard fell, and now people can get into his home, they could break in, so it's a danger factor, it's more significant, he can boneh kederko. Everybody agrees, both on Chol HaMoed as well as on Shemitah, a person can rebuild it as he wants. Any questions on that? Okay. It's interesting just to note that in the certain areas that we've seen so far, Shemitah has actually been more lenient than Chol HaMoed. That could be because of its length of time, could also be because its parameters are a little bit more strictly defined as dealing with agriculture, and some of these other things that we're talking about don't necessarily connect to that. So we've actually seen some leniencies on Shemitah more so than Chol HaMoed. Let's move to Mishnah.
Aren't there a lot of people that hold the Chol HaMoed like Yom Tov?
Like Yom Tov, to what extent?
Like religious guys, like on 47th Street. I don't think they work. I think it's like a...
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, well, they're not... Again, it's not going to be exactly like Yom Tov.
Maybe just the prayers are different, maybe.
The prayers are always going to reflect the differences in the days. Again,
it's company by me that they close down.
Yeah,
right.
They close.
We said the more a person can limit the work that he does, the better off he is. The rabbis identified Chol HaMoed as days which are holy and have significance. And the Torah really left it up to the rabbis to decide which things are allowed and which things aren't allowed. But the rabbis encouraged people as much as possible to avoid work and to avoid business and transactions as much as possible when they can, so that a person can focus on the sanctity of the holiday, that he has those extra prayers, he studies more Torah, he has opportunity to attend a few classes, read, things like that. That's what the holiday is there for.
Yeah, but Rabbi, it comes in down to faith. In other words, if a guy says, if I don't go into work today, I'm not going to make money. So he has the ability to do so because of what we're learning.
Yeah.
But maybe he should just say to himself, God's going to, if I hold the holiday better, God's going to send it to me anyway.
I hear that. It depends, though, what kind of situation it is. Yeah, if a person owns his own business, right? Right, maybe I can make that justification that he should have that. But sometimes when a person is an employee for somebody,
he's not going to get docked.
So it's not him. He's going to get docked. He's going to lose money. Like, there's a clear consequence that's going to happen as a result of that. Right. So every situation kind of is different on its own. The more a person can avoid, but the rabbis understood that a person has to work within the practical realm. If a person, even if he owns his own business, but he's got reps from China coming in, this is his account, and he has nothing else that he could do, and there was no other time that he can meet, and he's going to incur a tremendous principal loss, so the rabbis made leeway for that. They made a leniency for that because this is all being defined rabbinically anyway. So yeah, faith and observance definitely plays a role in it, but also just understanding that the hachamim had to work within practical realms of halakha and to determine what is practical and realistic to give to people and what sometimes might be asking them for a little bit too much. And so that's what the balance here is that we're talking. Let's go to Mishnah Heh, number 5. Mishnah Heh, again, talks about a few other practices, not necessarily related now to work, that are forbidden on around Chol HaMoed time. Some of these are applicable to us, some of these not. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir says, Ro'im et hanega'im b'tehila lehakel, aval lo le'achmir. So we're talking over here now about Ro'im et hanega'im means if a person had blemishes on his skin, like tzara'at, for example. So if you look at Sefer Vayikra, when a person gets a white discoloration on his skin or his different kinds of blemishes, that could be a sign that he is impure, that he has tzara'at and he becomes impure. So he needs to visit the Kohen. The Kohen has to inspect him, and the Kohen, based on the parameters that he knows, has the ability to declare him pure or impure. This is obviously more for the time in which these kinds of things existed. Today they don't exist, and it's only significant around Beit HaMikdash time when purity and impurity is a matter of significance. But it's important to understand it, that the rabbis, Rabbi Meir over here, says that ro'im et negaim b'tehila lehakel. You can take your blemish over to the Kohen to have him see it on the holiday, assuming that they're based on what you see, there's a likelihood that he's going to be lenient on you. In other words, and this is important.
Don't want to kill your vibe of the holiday.
Exactly. So this is a little bit of a, Rabbi Meir is like, I don't want to use the word like he's scamming it, but he doesn't want a person to go to the Kohen and have the Kohen declare him impure on the holiday. There's a formality over here. A person can very often see what's on his skin and know if he's going to be pure or impure. But he has to go to the Kohen so the Kohen can declare him pure or impure. So we're kind of turning a blind eye over here, Rabbi Meir says. If you see your blemish is likely tahor, go over to the Kohen and let the Kohen inspect it, because he's going to make you tahor and it's not going to be a problem. But if what you're seeing looks like something that could very possibly be tameh, don't go to the Kohen. Just avoid it, right? If you don't go, the Kohen can't declare you tameh. You technically uphold your status of being tahor. And then you'll go to him after the holiday and he'll make you tameh after the holiday. You see what's happening here? Like it's a little bit of... it doesn't work like this medically. Huh? It's a matter of convenience. We don't want him to become tameh on the holiday, and you don't become tameh until you're formally declared such by the Kohen.
So
it's not like medical. It's not like if I don't go to the doctor, I'm not sick, right? If a person is sick, you go to the doctor. You don't need the doctor to tell you you're sick. You're either sick or you're not sick. So it doesn't work like that with Sara'at. This is a spiritual disease. You only become tameh if the Kohen declares you that. If you don't go, don't ask, don't tell, then you're not actually tameh.
On a Tuesday,
generally you do, right? But Rabbi Meir is telling you to go lechatehila on the holiday. We only do that if it's likely going to be lehakel, that you're going to be lenient. Avalo leahmir. But we don't go if there's a possibility that he's going to be strict and declare you tamer. Right. Hachamim say, this is a little bit difficult, a person might not know. Hachamim omrim lo lehakel velo leahmir. Period. We don't look at blemishes. The Kohanim are off during the time of the holiday. The Kohanim don't look at blemishes on the holiday. Because even you might think it's tahor, and the Kohen looks at it and he says, now I'm stuck, I have to declare you tameh. So Hachamim said, we don't look at any kinds of blemishes, that is something we do on the holiday. That's din law number one over here in this Mishnah. Law number two, ve'od amar Rabbi Meir, furthermore said Rabbi Meir, melaket adam atzmot aviv ve'imo mipenesh simcha hi lo. A person can gather the bones of his mother and father because that is an act of happiness for him. Rabbi Yosef omer evel hulo. Rabbi Yosef disagrees. He says this is an act of mourning for him. Let's back up for a second and talk about a practice that it doesn't exist as much today. It's called likut atzamot. Likut atzamot means gathering the bones of a relative. What used to happen, I don't think it happens anymore today, is that people would bury their relatives on the spot. They didn't go to a specific cemetery, whatever it is. If a person passed away, they didn't travel them, take them to Israel, didn't have that. They buried them on the spot. Wherever they were, they buried them. Or they had a designated place, a cemetery, but they buried them close by. But sometimes burying them close by meant that they were buried separately from the rest of their family. So what did they do? They would bury them, mourn, have the entire course of the period. And after a year, they would dig up the body that they buried, which at that point had decomposed. It was basically bones. They would be milaket atzamot. They would gather the bones and they would move them to a family place where all of the relatives' bones were buried. That was called likut atzamot. Sounds like a bit of a weird practice for us, but that's what it is. Today we just bury the person in a designated plot or whatever it is. But back then that wasn't always the case of how they did it, right? I'll read to you over here. He says, "Shenohagim hayu likbor tehila et hamet bekever ri." They first used to bury their deceased in a temporary grave. Ulahan shenit akel habasar. After the flesh and everything else would rot, hayu melaktim et atzamot. They would gather the bones, vekovrim otam ba'aron bekever hamishpacha, and they would bury it in an aron, in a coffin, amongst the rest of the family's bodies. And so there became like a family. Each family had their own burial areas where all of the relatives of that family would be their bones would be buried there. Mm-hmm. So this is the act called likut atzamot.
You like to bury someone with no coffin?
What?
You like to bury someone just...
This is what they do, right?
They wrap the body. I don't know if they may have had a coffin there, yeah. And then they take them out and they put it
is
somewhere else.
They buried it in the toilet, no?
It's a good question. I don't know. It sounds...
I think I heard that also.
Yeah, they don't make a box. They don't make a cup. Right. Yeah, I don't know how much of that. As long as the body is wrapped or something. Again, I'm not an expert on laws of kvura, so I'm not going to say. But that's sort of what's going on over here. So there's an argument over here in this Mishnah. Can a person, let's say the year of the after they died, falls out on Chol HaMoed? The time to gather the bones falls out on Chol HaMoed. Are you allowed to perform the act of gathering the bones to move them on Chol HaMoed? And this really depends on how you view this act of gathering the bones. Is the act of gathering the bones an act of mourning, of sadness? If so, we would likely avoid it. We would want to avoid that on the Mo'ed, on Chol HaMoed. If you view it as something of happiness, I guess, and it's a little strange to think of it that way, but that's how Rabbi Meir views it, then you would be allowed. So that's why Rabbi Meir says it's permissible to gather the bones of his mother and father and move them, because that's a simha. That's a happiness for him. What's the happiness over here? He's not happy that his parents passed away. He's happy that he has the ability to go and bury them together with the rest of the relatives. It's almost like a comforting position. So he says that's something you would want to do quickly. You want to do it. It's comforting. It's happy, quote unquote, to the person. And so it's permissible to do on the holiday. Rabbi Yosef, however, disagreed. He said the act of likut atzamot, of gathering the bones, is an act of mourning. It's part of the burial process, and a person grieves on that day that he moves it. It's a reminder of the fact that he has lost his father and mother or other relatives. And so therefore, and in fact, we find that
there's something to do the following year and the following year?
Right.
To commemorate that day.
Well, he only does the likut atzamot once.
Right.
But it's like a yahrzeit kind of thing. Yeah, basically. Right? So the question is, how does a person view their yahrzeit? That's an interesting, you could almost compare it to that, right? So most people would probably say it's a difficult day. It's a sad day. It conjures up emotions and memories and things like that. Others might say it's a comforting kind of day, meaning you remember your parents, you connect to them. You could look at it from different ways. It'd be Yosef looks at it from the standpoint of it's a grieving, it's sorrow for the person, it's a sad day. And so that's not something we want to do on Chol HaMoed. And so that's going to get pushed till after Chol HaMoed. It seems like the halakha follows more to Biyoseh over here, because I know that there are actually, the halakha is that on the day that a person moves the bones, when he does such a thing, he has to actually mourn on that day. He has to rip his clothes and mourn on that day. So it seems quite clear that they're following the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, that it's a day of mourning. And in fact, Ibn Ubadiah says, "En halakha ke Rabbi Meir bishtehem." The halakha does not follow Rabbi Meir on these first two laws, when it came to seeing the blemishes and moving the bones.
Not get the body.
Correct. We would not do this on Chol HaMoed.
It's a lot of work. You're saying you can't cement the wall and you can't do extra work of irrigation and puddles and holes. But
right.
Meanwhile, you're digging up the body. You're putting it in the thing.
Well, you can't. But that's not because of work. It's because of happiness or sadness.
My disagreement would be more.
You're saying it's
a lot of work.
But you would say that that's something that's necessary for the person to do. It's
also what's the lost.
I don't know. Not a loss. It's not financial
urgency to do it. In other words, I understand if you have to bury somebody, of course, the
mitzvah. That day, it's the year.
It seems like it was something that they did at a specific time, yeah.
Right, it's the year. Right.
He doesn't mention it specifically, but it sounds like it's something that would be somewhat time-sensitive. You're saying it doesn't sound like it's a time-sensitive thing, why not just wait?
What's an extra few days under the ground?
No, I'm saying.
I hear that. but it seems like it's a time sensitive thing.
Is another story.
Yeah, yeah. Now I don't know. I forget
you
if
said
the
mother and father could. We don't hold bodies.
This seems
anyway.
To be specifically for mother and father,
right,
but yeah,
we don't hold it.
That's how it's
you're
brought
not doing
here.
It either way, so does it.
Right. I don't know. Today we don't do this. I've never seen anybody do the concept of melaket atzamot. One thing that I forget if the Mishnayot are going to discuss is another question of ripping one's clothes on Chol HaMoed.
It's against the law to dig up a grave.
It could be.
It is.
Probably today.
American law, for sure.
Right. I wonder if you gave them a religious reason, maybe they would allow you. But when they have the Graves Diggers Union, a lot of our laws today get circumvented because you have to go through the Graves Diggers Union. Right. That's why we don't bury at night over here in Israel. They bury at night. Right, really, if a person passes away, you should bury them at night. You should bury them right away. You shouldn't wait till the next morning. But we're stuck because you can't because the Union of Gravediggers will not bury at night. They won't let you. So it's against the law. So we have no choice but to wait. But in Israel, they'll bury at night. Mm-hmm. Another question here that I don't know that if the Mishnayot are going to answer, but there's an argument about ripping one's clothes on Chol HaMoed. If a relative passes away on Chol HaMoed, so we know we don't mourn, the mourning will begin after the period of the holiday. The question is, however, will you rip the ripping of the clothes seems to be something that needs to be done in close connection with the actual death. Right? Really, well, the way we do it today is very different than what the Gemara says. The Gemara says you're supposed to rip the clothes the minute you find out that it happens. Or any time you're present at the time that a person dies, a person has to rip their clothes right away. Our custom became, for various reasons, to only rip after the burial process is completely finished. We don't rip right away. We rip afterwards in a more ceremonial thing when the Shiva, when the mourning actually begins. So the question is, does that apply also on Chol HaMoed? The mourning is not going to begin till afterwards, but you want the ripping to be done closer into the proximity to the person who passes away. So there's a mahloket. It's a bit of a difference. Shulchan Aruch seems to say that we would rip the clothes. The Ramah, the Ashkenazi Posek, says to wait. There are different customs even in this own community.
My grandfather passed away on Chol HaMoed. And I forgot what they did. I forgot when they ripped.
See if you remember. But different rabbis will do different things.
I think they ripped after the holiday.
I think it's more common to rip after the holiday. I think it's very it's very confusing for people to rip on Chol HaMoed but not do any mourning and then take it off. It's very confusing for people.
They had the funeral on Chol HaMoed.
That for sure. There's no question.
And then he had to wait, I think, 2 to 3 days to sit.
Right.
Doesn't it break it up?
No, it only breaks if you start. We're going to learn this at the end if you start before the holiday. 1 minute even before the holiday.
If you sit
1 hour before the holiday, that's it. That's
you're absolved. So
you're absolved. The mourning ends.
Really?
Huh?
So what? During
we'll talk about it when we get there. I don't recall. We'll talk about it when we get there. This is the whole third chapter.
My father-in-law had the other extreme way. My Grace's grandmother passed away Erev Shavuot.
Right.
He sat for 10 minutes.
Right.
And my grandfather passed away Chol HaMoed Sukkot, so he
had to have a lingering. Yeah.
Much harder, I guess.
All of these different permutations. We're going to see this in the third chapter. The third chapter is going to talk a lot about the laws of mourning in connection with the Moed. The last thing that this Mishnah mentions is something connected to that. Lo ye'orer adam al meto ve'lo yaspidenu kodem laregel sheloshim yom. The Mishnah tells us a person should not be aroused on his deceased. In other words, he should not conjure up emotions of sadness and sorrow around his deceased person. Velo yaspidenu, he should not eulogize him kodem laregel 30 yom, before the holiday, 30 days. In other words, according to this Mishnah, a person is not allowed to eulogize his deceased person 30 days prior to the holiday. Prior to the holiday. This is not a halakha that is accepted. He says over here, Rabbeinu Ovadia says, "De'amre ta'ama b'gemara." The Gemara brings the reason, "Shederech b'nei adam lechnos ma'ot letzorech haregel." What's the reason why? Because generally a person has more expenses around holiday time. He's got to buy more food, he has to buy more clothes, he has a lot of expenses around holiday time. So usually he starts to separate his money that he's going to spend extra on the holiday around 30 days before the holiday. So he says a person is getting himself ready before the holiday, kodem laregel 30 yom, michi shama shedorshim behilchot haregel, when he starts to hear people talking about the holiday's coming, starts to get his finances in order, knows he's going to spend. And now we're worried if he starts to bring up feelings of emotions and sadness around someone who deceased, and he starts to eulogize them, shema yiten hama'ot shekanas letzorech haregel, he might use the money that he set aside for the sanctity of the holiday and for honoring the holiday, he's going to use them as part of his burial and eulogy and other things. And that's going to cause him to not have a full happiness on the holiday. So that's one reason that's brought down as to why we don't want to do eulogies and things 30 days before the holiday. Others say that if you start to bring up feelings of sadness and mourning and eulogy 30 days, the deceased is not forgotten from a person's heart 30 days. This explains why we have a concept of a 30-day mourning period.
Right.
Because they say a person does not truly get over or come to terms with the death of a relative until after 30 days is over. And so we don't want to have eulogies and conjuring up all of this sadness 30 days before the holiday, because or within 30 days of the holiday, because then a person will be experiencing those pains and emotions on the holiday itself. Now, I'm just trying to see over here in terms of halakha.
We don't have that today.
No, it can't be, no.
The only time I...
So here, the Kehati over here says, Mishemet lo met b'chola moed, someone who has lost a relative on chola moed, lo ye'orer acherim shehem bare nefesh yivku imo. He should not arouse others to come and cry with him. In other words, he can experience it on his own, but he should not have a public display of bringing other people in. She'em leharbot b'misped u'bebechi b'moed. Because we don't want to do that on the moed. V'lo yasbideno lo yehazer ahar sifdan. He should not go out and hire a professional eulogizer. She'ispodet meto she'met lo minifne hazman kodem laregel 30 yom. He should not do it 30 days. Now you're asking that it seems like we do eulogies within 30 days. We don't do eulogies on Chol HaMoed for sure. We don't do any eulogies on Chol HaMoed, but you're asking that it seems as though we definitely do eulogies before the Regel Shloshim Yom.
The only time we don't,
if it's Nisan, we don't do it and something like that.
Do a eulogy.
Right.
Any time in the
But that's because those days themselves are designated. This Mishnah is basically saying that if you have a deceased, you're not going to eulogize your deceased if it's 30 days within a holiday. So let's say Shavuot, or that's not really the case. We don't really see that being done. So it doesn't seem like this Mishnah is going to be accepted halakha. Some interesting ideas behind it and some other things that come out of it. We understand why 30 days is a significant number. So there are some elements of this Mishnah that make it in, but it does not seem like this is halakha. I'm going to have to double check on the halakha over here and see if the Gemara does something with it, or maybe there's some other reason why we don't accept this as halakha lemaaseh. And maybe we'll start with that next time, and then we'll move to Mishnah Vav. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen.
We go get the bagels and take this moment.